Latter-day Saints Home Educators is pleased to bring you this audio presentation, recorded live during the May 2013 Youth Education Conference held at Southern Virginia University.
Okay, so my name is Ariel. That's my first name. That's my real name, just like the Little Mermaid. You can say, call me Ariel, or you can say it like the crab does. You can say Ariel. Either one of those works. Okay. All right, so you see the title up there, What is Love? How to Tell If You're in Love? And Why the Answer to Those Two Questions Matters More Today Than It Ever Has Before. That's what I want to talk to you about today. I want to talk about love and help you understand and find answers to those questions. All right, so I want you to fast forward 20 to 25 years from now. Just imagine that and close your eyes and just think, 20 to 25 years from now, right? Here's the scenario. Your 14-year-old daughter, you have a 14-year-old daughter, okay? Your 14-year-old daughter comes home from a day at the mall with her friends, and she says, Mom, Dad, I think I'm in love. How do you know when you're in love? What do you say to her? What's your answer?
How?
Let's hear some hands. Come on, let's see some hands. What's your answer? Go ahead, please.
How do you know?
That's what she's asking you. How do you know? How do you know when you're in love? No, you don't know. Okay. Anyone else? Anyone want to take a stab at it? How do you know? Go ahead, please.
I would tell her to wait approximately 15 more years.
Oh. It's a good answer for you, but it's not a satisfying answer for your 14-year-old daughter. Okay. All right. Well, anyone have an answer? It's kind of a hard question. All right. Okay. So, well, let's move on. Stand-up activity. I'd like you all to stand up. I'm going to ask you some questions, and if you agree, I want you to stand up. And if you don't agree, I want you to sit down. So, no, you don't have to stand up now. Just sit down. Maybe we ought to do that. Just make sure that everybody's legs work. Everybody stand up. Come on, stand up, everybody. Okay. And sit down. Okay, so everybody's legs work. I know that you're capable of standing. That's good. Here we go. First question. Can we define love, or is it different for everybody? If you think that love is sort of different for every single person and we can't really define it, stand up. Okay. You guys can go. Okay, you guys can, all of you who stood up, you can leave because there's no more point in us talking today, right? Because if love is different for every single person and there's no real way to define it, then I'm done, right? So I'm going to assume that love isn't different for every single person. I'm going to assume that there is something called love and that we can define it and talk about it. Next question. Are there different types of love? If you think there are different types of love, please stand. All right. A whole bunch of, most of you. Okay. Go ahead, sit down. Wow. Anyone not sure? If you think, I'm not sure if there's different types of love, stand up. Those of you who are not, it's okay, be proud to, it's a good day to be unsure, right? Go ahead, sit down. Anyone says, no, there aren't different types of love, there's just one type of love. Oh, really? Wow. I'm going to pick on you guys later for that. Okay, next question. Are there male-female differences in love? Do men love or experience love differently than women? If you think that, stand up. Wow. Okay, go ahead, sit down. Okay, how many of you feel like you're not sure? If you're not sure, stand up. Okay, some of you are not sure. Okay, good. All right, yay for the not sure people. How many of you say, no, there aren't different types of love? There's just, I mean, wait a minute. How many of you say, no, there aren't any differences between men and women? Wow, you guys are really, there's a consensus here. Next question. Are there cultural differences? Maybe like people in Japan love differently than people in, you know, Peru versus people in Germany. Are there different types of love that way, like culturally? How many of you say, yes, there are. Stand up. Some of you say yes. Okay. Go ahead, sit down. How many of you say, no, there are not different types culturally? Okay. All right. Go ahead, sit down. How many of you are not sure? You're not sure people? All right, not sure people. There you go. Good. You're the ones I'm looking for, because I'm trying to show that it's kind of hard to talk about some of this stuff. Let's go on. Can we make it happen, or does it happen to us? How many of you say, make? And when I say make it happen, I'm not talking about can you make that boy fall in love with you. I'm talking about can you make yourself fall in love with someone, or is it something that happens to you? Okay, so how many of you, if you think it just happens to you, stand up. Okay, go ahead and sit down. If you think it's something you can do, you can make yourself love someone, stand up. Okay, sit down. And how many of you are not sure people? Stand up, not sure. Yes, yes. All right, go ahead, sit down, you're not sure people. That's great. You're making me happy. Okay, does love develop through stages, or is it just love? Okay, so if you think love develops, like there's different stages of love. First there's the this stage, and then the this stage. And stand up if you think there's different stages. Oh, wow, we're back to a whole bunch of you. Okay, sit down. If you think it doesn't develop through stages, stand up. Ah, it doesn't develop through stages. Nobody stands. Okay, how about unsure people? Stand up, unsure people. Yay, unsure people. Way to go. All right. Here we go. If it does develop through stages, so I guess this is just for the people who said it develops through stages, can you do stuff to further its development? Like if you're in this stage, are there certain things you can do to move it on to help it go to the next stage? Stand up if you think there are things you can do to... Oh, it's everybody. Oh, you guys are party poopers. Go ahead, sit down. Let's move on. Can it come and go? You're in love, and then you kind of like the feelings fade, but then maybe they come back, but then maybe they fade. Does it... Or is it this constant thing, like once you find real love, it just never goes away? And then, how many of you think it could potentially come and go? Stand up. Okay, sit down. How many of you say, no, once you have love, it's going to just last. It's going to be constant. If it's real love, it'll be constant. Stand up. Okay. Go ahead, sit down. How many of you, unsure people, stand up. All right. Yeah, okay. Okay. Does it lead to, that's not even a good question. That's just me being silly. Does it lead to better relationships? Yeah, okay. If you stood at least once in this exercise for the unsure option, stand up right now. Yay! Okay, good. Now, I have a reason to be here today. Go ahead, sit down. If you already knew everything about love and you already had your minds made up, I'd probably just go home. But let's move on. Okay, oh no, more stand up. I forgot. Myths versus realities. I'm going to give you some myths, some statements, and you're going to tell me if you think it's a myth, you're going to stand up. Okay, so the first one, love at first sight. If you think, how many of you think love at first sight is real, like that really does happen? Stand up. Love at first sight. Okay, sit down. How many of you think love at first sight doesn't really happen? That's impossible. It can't happen like that. Stand up. Okay. All right, sit down. How many of you are not sure? Good. Good, not sure people. All right. Way to go. Next one. There's only one true love for you in your life. There's this idea of like there's one true love, you have to find that person, right? Stand up if you think there's only one true love. Oh, all right, way to go. How many of you think, no, that's not true, there's not one true love? A whole bunch of you, wow. Okay, sit down, party poopers. Okay, how many of you are unsure? Good for you, I'm glad. Let's move on. Love conquers all. Or basically, all you need is love. Like, to have a good marriage, all you really need is love. If you have love, you don't need anything else. How many of you think all you need is love? Stand up. Okay, good. Well, there you go. Some romantics. I love that. Okay. Okay. How many of you say, no, that's not true. You need more than just love. Okay, sit down. Oh, man. What is it that you... Okay, can I ask a question real quick? You in the blue t-shirt there, you stood. What? Name me one thing that you need that besides love.
Commitment.
Oh, that's interesting. That's a good thought. I was just wondering if he was going to say like money or something like that. But, okay. Let's go on. Wait, we didn't do the... I'm sorry. We didn't do the people who are unsure. Unsure people, stand up. Okay, good. Good for you. Love is blind. When you're in love, you don't really... Real love, you don't really see any... You don't see the flaws. You don't see the... You know, you just see all the good. That's it. Right? Something like that? I don't know. I didn't come up with the phrase, but... Maybe that's a bad one. Go ahead.
I think what they mean by love
You don't care what they look like. Okay, that's good. You don't care what they look like, and you don't care if they have any kind of certain characteristics that this might not be important to you. You just look at the good. Okay, you don't see what they look like, stuff like that. Okay. Love is blind, stand up if you think it's true. Okay. All right, sit down. Love is not blind, stand up. Ooh, okay, sit down. Not sure what this guy's talking about. Okay, good. Okay, sit down. All right, great. Let's move on. You have to love yourself before you can love others. How many of you say that's true? Stand up. Okay, wow. Okay, sit down. How many of you say that's not true? Stand up. All right. How many of you say I'm not sure? Stand up. All right, sit down. Good. Are you confused yet? Yes. Now that I have thoroughly confused you, that's a good time to start learning, right? It's a good time to start learning. Before you can learn, you have to understand the things that you don't know. So it's good that we did this exercise, right? John A. Witzel once said, never was a revelation given without first a question being asked, right? You have to have questions. You have to ask questions to start finding truth. Anyway, that's just a thought. Let's move on. Why does understanding love matter today more than ever? So I'm going to tackle the third question first. The third question is, why does this matter now today more than ever? Okay, and we're going to start off with a story. I'm at Texas State University. I'm teaching a marriage and family class. This is not, these are not LDS kids or anything like that. This is, in fact, Texas State University is known as the party school of Texas. Okay, it's kind of, girls come to class in bikini tops and short shorts and things. It's just crazy. It's not like a normal place. I just lost my, still there. Okay, good. I'm teaching the marriage and family class, and we're talking about sexual mores, like your values, your standards for sexuality. And I would ask my class, what is the standard that you use to determine if it's okay to be sexually intimate with someone or not? Now, we all have a standard in our church. You have the First Strength of Youth pamphlet. You have all kinds of standards. What is our standard? Can someone tell us, what's our standard for knowing when it's okay to engage in sexual intimacy with someone?
Marriage.
That's the standard. That's our standard, right? That's the one I'd start with. I'd say, how many of you raise your hand if marriage is your standard? And in a class of about 120 students, there'd be about 15 Baptist girls sitting around in the back somewhere who'd raise their hands and say, yeah, that's my standard. So I got another over 100 students are sitting there looking at me like, no, that's not marriage. And I would say to them, okay, well, if marriage is not your standard, what is? Hands go up. I call on someone, and what do they say? When is it okay to have sex with someone? What's their answer? You probably know it. When you're in love, when you love someone, it's okay. Wow. That was kind of, I had spent so much time in Utah in grad school that it was kind of weird for me to suddenly be in Texas and go, oh, yeah, okay, wow. That's, okay, when you're in love. And so that person raised their hand and says, yeah, when you're in love. And I would say, okay, so tell me, how do you know when you're in love? All the hands go down. Not a single person in the room can tell me anything intelligent about how they know when they're really in love. And then I ask, have you ever made a mistake? Have you ever entered into a sexual relationship with someone because you thought you were in love, and then later on you realized that it wasn't really love? Hands go up. Lots of hands. Maybe a third of the kids. It's not a good standard. And the reason why it's not a good standard is for this very exercise we did here. Love is confusing and complicated. Most people don't have a clue, right? Most people are clueless. So part of the reason why I want you to understand what love is because in your lives, you're gonna be with these people in college and you're gonna be able to help them. You're gonna be able to talk to them about their standard. You're gonna be able to ask hard questions like, well, what is love then? And how do you know when you're really in love? If that's your standard, think about it. Let's talk about it. And get them to really consider their standard. right? So anyway, let's go through. Hang on, I got to catch myself up now. The other reason, Sanford Braver, who's a researcher in Arizona State University, conducted a study in the state of Arizona asking people who had been divorced why they got a divorce. And he asked them all kinds of, they had all kinds of options. There were 27 options on this survey. Things like financial troubles, or my husband has an alcohol problem, or we fight too much, or he beats me, or there's just zillions of options there. The number one pick was, we just grew apart. We just grew apart. In other words, yeah, we were in love, everything was great and special, but then that kind of faded and went away, and we grew apart and decided to get a divorce. So the number two reason why I would want you to really understand these issues is so that you can help people to have a better marriage and to avoid that sort of falling out of love divorce story, right? Anyway, okay, so most people don't have a clue. I just, for fun, I put up some Taylor Swift lyrics there for you, right? Yeah, this is a popular song of hers. It's the title track from her latest album. Loving him is like driving a new Maserati down a dead-end street. Faster than the wind, passionate as sin, ended so suddenly. Loving him is like trying to change your mind once you're already flying through the free fall. Like the colors in autumn, so bright, just before they lose it all. Wouldn't that be helpful for your 14-year-old daughter coming home from the mall? Not a good option. Okay. Let's go on. Okay, so these are the three points I just said. These are the three things I would want you to be able to do when we're done with this presentation. First of all, help your friends understand the limitations of their standard so that you can talk them out of it. Help them to realize that falling in love is not a good standard for deciding when it's okay to have sex with someone. Number two, help them to maybe let's say you can't talk them out of their standard. That's going to happen. But at least you could maybe help them to better understand what love is so that they actually live their standard better. Right? They won't make that mistake of, oh, I think I'm in love. Right? It's kind of weird, but think about it. How many of you, just raise your hand if you've ever had that conversation with someone or heard that conversation about, am I in love? I don't know. I think I'm in, I don't know. Have you ever had that conversation? Raise your hand. Or heard that conversation. Okay. How many of you ever had that same conversation about, you know, he's really cute and I think I'm married to him, but I just don't know. I'm just not sure if we're married or not. I mean, I guess I better wait a little while longer to see if we're really married or not. I just don't. Have you ever seen that conversation? Why haven't you? Because marriage is pretty clear. You're either married or you're not, right? And so you help people to understand what love really is. And I think there are some things we can say, and I think they might help people to avoid making that big mistake, right? And then finally, as I said, to help people avoid divorce. Okay. And then as an added bonus, for you, as we learn all this stuff, you'll be able to recognize it in your own life, and it'll help your marriages too, right? Okay, so what does this guy know about love? First of all, here's what I'm going to try to share with you today. Some gospel teachings and insights. Some theory about love. There's actually scientists who come up with theories about love. And then also some research on love. People in love looking at all kinds of aspects of their behavior, their biology. So those are the things I want to share with you. The idea is I want to share with you stuff that has helped me the most. I'm not telling you everything that's important. I'm just telling you the things that have helped me. Okay. So I just thought of something. Hey, one of my kids, could you go to Durham to the small copy machine in the copy room and get handouts? There's handouts, they look like this, and there should be about 45 or 50 of them. If the copy machine ran out of paper, just put more paper in there and let it keep going. Thank you. Basically, when this is all over, I'm going to give you a handout that has everything on the PowerPoint on it, because I want you to be able to study it and be missionaries and go and help people. Okay? All right, so let's start with gospel teachings, the big picture. Here we go. The Savior said to the Pharisees, "Love thy neighbor as thyself." There's something to learn about love there. But to his disciples, he said, "A new commandment I give unto you, that you love one another as I have loved you. that you also love one another. Any thoughts on that? What do we learn from that? Why did he say one thing to the Pharisees and another thing to his disciples? Go ahead, please, over there.
Maybe the Pharisees weren't ready for the higher.
Yeah, maybe the Pharisees weren't ready for the higher understanding of love, right? The higher understanding of love. Maybe the Pharisees already had a lot of experience with self-love, right? And he was trying to connect with them in a way that helped them, that would help them to understand. You know, if you only loved other people as much as you love yourself, you would be doing really well, right? But what does he say to his disciples? Does he say, love other people the way you love yourself? He doesn't really talk to his disciples about self-love. He talks to his disciples about loving other people the way he loves. Go ahead, in the back, please. Excellent. His disciples have a testimony of Christ's love. They know his love. And so when he says to them, love others as I have loved you, they know what he's talking about. The Pharisees wouldn't have understood that. They weren't ready for that. Excellent comments. So there's this, there we go. Here's another one. We love him because he first loved us. Okay, so my question for you is, do you have to love yourself before you can love others? A lot of people stood on that one. If you want, you can defend it. Go ahead and raise your hand and say, well, wait a minute. But I kind of look at the scriptures and I don't see the Savior talking a lot about self-love. I mostly see him talking about charity, which is a very selfless kind of love. And so how do we love? How do we first learn to love? Is it because we first learn to love ourselves? Do like little three-year-olds really love themselves a lot? Do they talk about how cool they are and stuff? And little three-year-olds learn to love because their moms and dads love them, right? We learn to love because others love us. And that's what we need, right? We need the love of others. And that's what helps us and frees us up so that we can become loving people ourselves. Let's go on. Does the Savior emphasize different types of love? This is a question that really makes me think. Are there different types of love that he emphasizes or talks about in the scriptures? I can't really see them. What's the word for the kind of love that I should have for my parents? What does Christ call that love?
Charity.
Yeah. What's the kind of love that I should have for my wife? Charity, right? Christ says, you know, I think Paul writes, you know, husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church. Right, there's a direct instruction there to, you know, the love you have for your wife is charity, the love you have for your parents is charity, the love you have for your children is charity. There's a sense in which the Savior is sort of getting at some kind of big, yeah, there is this Christ-like kind of love that should sort of permeate through all your loving relationships, right? What's the kind of love I should have for my neighbor down the street, Brother Jones? Charity. That's something to think about. I don't have that all worked out, but I just want you to think about the idea that Christ is talking about charity when he talks about all those kinds of relationships, right? So if there are different types of love, we have to be really careful about how we talk about them. Let's go on. Soulmates. This is President Spencer W. Kimball. He's speaking to BYU college students about marriage and love, right? This is good stuff. 1976. How old were you in 1976? Older than your parents. Yeah. Anyway, here we go. Here's the quote. Soulmates are fiction and an illusion. And while every young man and woman will seek with all diligence and prayerfulness to find a mate with whom life can be most compatible and beautiful, yet it is certain that almost any good man and any good woman can have happiness and a successful marriage if both are willing to pay the price. Yeah, so most of you got that one right. I think almost all of you stood on that question about, here we go, here was the question, right? Is there only one true love for you? I didn't catch hardly any of you on that one. It doesn't seem like there's one true love for you, right? That doesn't mean, though, keep in mind, I'm a bishop, so I need to say this to you. That doesn't mean, though, that you should still pray about who you marry. And sometimes the answer might be, no, don't marry this person, right? There's someone else over here to marry, you know. So there's still divine guidance, and there's still people. Some people are more right than others, and there's a world of good, better, and best, and all of that. So let's go on. Gospel teachings. Here's another one, more from President Kimball. The following two paragraphs after that quote. Listen to this. There is a never-failing formula which will guarantee to every couple a happy and eternal marriage. Marriage depends first and always on the two spouses, who can always make their marriage successful and happy if they are determined, unselfish, and righteous. So love is not the only thing that we need, right? Unless your definition of love includes being determined, unselfish, and righteous. I would almost say that Christ's definition of charity might include those three, right? But the way we commonly talk about romantic love in our society, we don't normally think of those things, righteousness. You know, I really love him. Yeah, but how righteous are you? You know, we don't, nobody, whoever, you've never seen a conversation like that, right? Well, I think I really love him. Yeah, but where's your heart right now? You know, how righteous are you living? How are you, you know, we don't go there. Let's go on. Some theory. Sternberg's theory. Sternberg is this guy who's got a theory about love. It's called the triangle of love. Passion, intimacy, and commitment. That's what makes up love. There are three things that you need to have real love. That's what Sternberg is saying. To have real love, you need those three things. Does that make sense? You like that? Do you think, oh no, there's a fourth thing. It should be a square. You know, is there a fourth thing that's missing? Or is there, how many of you, that works for you, right? The kind of love that you should have in marriage, passion, intimacy, and commitment. Anybody? Oh, you guys are all, raise your hand if you like that one. Okay, your hands are tired maybe. You don't like it? You're still thinking about it. Okay, well, let me just tell you about the reason why I think this is an insightful way to think about love is because then suddenly Sternberg starts talking about types of love that are kind of like less than the real love. So he has types, but they're kind of like, here we go, infatuation. He would call infatuation when you have a lot of passion without any real intimacy or commitment. Liking is when you have intimacy, but not a lot of passion or commitment. Romantic love, he would say, is a lot of passion and intimacy, but not a lot of commitment yet. Empty love, he would be something like having commitment without the other two, right? So let me tell you a story. I'm in 10th grade. Yeah, I was in 10th grade once. Okay, we're homeschoolers. We homeschooled all three of our kids. They came to these conferences, but I was public school, right? So I'm in 10th grade. I've changed schools. This is my first semester at the new school. I don't know anybody. This is my first class, AP History or something like that. No, it wasn't AP. It was just American History with Mrs. Peretta, who we called Mrs. Piranha because she was really tough and scary. I come into class on the very first day. I sit down at a desk trying to, like, mind my own business, and this little blonde girl comes in and sits down in the chair next to me. And I look over at her and I think, I'm in love. She's cute. She's just this cute thing. Oh my goodness, she's so cute. We will call her Terry. Not necessarily her real name. And so, I'm pretty sure that I want to marry this girl. Pretty sure that she's the love of my life. Pretty happy to, you know, talk to her and try to make friends with her and get to know her better. Right? What's really going on there? What would Sternberg say? Is there real love? No. Infatuation, maybe. There's some passion there. Do I know her? I don't even know her name at this point. She's just a cute girl there, but I'm pretty sure I'm in love. Is that really love? No, that's not really okay. Sternberg, one of the implications of Sternberg's theory is that you can't really have love if you don't know the person. How can you have intimacy if you don't even know their name? I mean, if you have intimacy with someone and you don't even know their name, like you just watch them in class, you're probably a stalker, right? That's not a good sign, right? Okay, hang on to the handouts. Don't pass them out yet. Those are for the end of the presentation. We'll leave them somewhere and you can grab them on your way out. Okay, so anyway, is there love at first sight? Could there possibly be love at first sight using this model? There really can't be. You know, I don't know this girl. I don't know anything about her. There's no intimacy. Commitment. Is there any kind of commitment? No, I haven't even talked to her yet. So here's the thought, though. How do you make sense of married couples who say it was love at first sight? Go ahead. Okay, so they had a feeling like I had, but maybe it wasn't love at first sight, okay? Okay, good thought. Go ahead, please. Divine guidance. Ooh, that's a good one. Divine guidance. I have read stories in biographies of prophets where they said, saw the girl at the dance, knew I was supposed to marry her. Divine guidance. But is that the same thing as saying love? Like I had intimacy, I had everything. So divine guidance can happen, but that still isn't quite the same thing as saying that there was true love, real love, from the first second, right? You don't know the girl, you don't know her name, the Spirit tells you you're supposed to marry her. That's, I believe that's possible. Go ahead, please, back there, and then we'll come over here.
It could be infatuation at first sight, and then you get to know each other, and then it becomes love.
Okay, so infatuation at first sight, and then it becomes love, right? Over here. He just said it. Okay, so now I want you to think about this. What if I would have married Terry? What if I would have actually dated her, got to know her, we had this big, long relationship, we eventually got married, and we've been married for 25 years, and we got a bunch of kids. What story would I tell when I go to ward activities and people ask me about, oh, how'd you meet your wife, and tell us that story? And I'd be telling a story about love at first sight, wouldn't I? I'd be telling that story. But I didn't marry Terry. So how often do I tell that story? When I meet people and they ask me about me and my wife, do I tell the story about Terry and how I thought I was going to marry her? No, I would get in trouble if I did that, right? I would not ever do that, right? So there's a selection effect. There's a natural selection. Some people who are infatuated at first sight and eventually it turns into love and they get married, they tell that story that it was from the very first second I saw him, right? I knew it was love. Whereas there's a whole, for every one of those people, there's probably like 10 people who didn't marry the person and realized it wasn't really love, right? So you got to be careful with that. Let's go on. Kessler. Okay, so there's this guy named Kessler. He's got a theory, and I'm just summarizing. These are summary, big. I'm overgeneralizing, oversimplifying some of these theories. He says dating that meets our needs for acceptance and confirmation leads to feelings of love. So ultimately, when we're dating and getting to know people, the people who sort of accept us and validate us and help us to feel like a good person, that's going to make us feel like we love them, right? So there's this process there where we go into the dating scene needing, there's a need there, right? There's a need for connection and intimacy and validation. And when we get that, those are the people we're more likely to fall in love with. Love is based on progressive, positive emotional interaction. So the more positivity you can maintain in the relationship, the more likely it'll turn into a loving relationship, right? So being positive helps love develop, right? That's what, so we can talk about, here's some things that you can do to help love happen, right? There's more examples I could give you, but let's move on. Reese's four stages of love. So this guy has these four stages of love. I won't tell all of them to you, but he says, sharing intimate thoughts and helping and feelings creates mutual dependencies. So the more you disclose and the more you get to know that person, the more you start having all those feelings of love, the more you become dependent on them and they become dependent on you. So developing love makes you dependent on that person for your well-being. That's something to keep in mind as you start dating and you go off to college and you have these romantic relationships where you fall in love and all that. Falling in love is a risk, you know. And you're making yourself dependent on someone and vulnerable to their life situation. And it could affect you. So you just have to be careful there. Let's go on. Goldstein's three stages. I actually want to show you all three of these. This is fun. There's a falling in love stage, and then stage two is disappointment. I'm here to crush your dreams today. Okay. Aside, there's other things I want to accomplish, but I do want to sort of. No, I'm just kidding. Disappointment. Goldstein is saying that this is a stage of the development of real love. There's this falling in love. Oh, everything's great and wonderful. And then there's kind of like a reality check time and kind of like seeing things for what they really are. And then being able to move past that and still love the person. Right? That's a very interesting insight about love. If love develops, does it develop for that stage? I kind of like that. Kind of like that insight. That falling in love might be all exciting and fun and crazy, but eventually reality comes, knocking at the door, right? So maybe love is not blind. Maybe the kind of love that lasts a long time is not completely blind. You kind of see the person and see who they are and understand them. It's kind of like charity, because charity is when you see someone with their flaws and their sins and their problems, and you love them anyway, right? In fact, you don't love them in spite of their limitations and their sins and their flaws. You love them because of those things. All the more reason to love them, because they need your love, right? So there's a sense in which love can overcome that disappointment stage. Let's move on. Styles of love. You might have heard that. This guy's popular in Utah, so maybe you've heard of this. This guy named Chapman. He's got these love languages. He wrote a book called The Five Love Languages. He says people have different ways of showing love and different ways in which they want to be loved. Quality time. These are his five languages. Quality time, words of affirmation, physical touch, giving service, and giving gifts. Gifts is a kind of a weird one to me. It's kind of like, if you love me, buy me something. But that seems weird to me. But the other ones really connect with it. I understand them really well. If you love me, you would go mow the lawn, right? If you love me, you would spend more time with me. If you love me, you'd hug me more. You know, you'd hold my hand and stuff. If you love me, you would tell me, right? There are different ways in which people want to be shown love. And there are different ways in which people generally show love, right? Interesting idea. Chapman says that when you really love someone, your style of love adapts to meet their needs, right? You learn to speak their language, right? And so there's a sense in which, if there's, again, this is a developmental issue. If your love is developing and changing and growing, then what it's doing is it's changing to adapt so that that other person can really know that you love them, right? To some degree, then, love is different for different people. Some of you, a bunch of you said that, right? It's different for different people. And I said, oh, we'd have to stop there. But at least to some degree, it is kind of different. You may say you love your mom, but maybe she wants you to do the dishes, right? Ouch, sorry. I needed to say that, right? Talk is cheap, and sometimes people want acts of service, right? And other things don't really matter to them. You might be trying to show love to someone, and they might not be experiencing it as love. And finally, just the idea that love can be miscommunicated. You know, there can be missed signals when it comes to love. I think that's a really helpful insight as well. Let's go on. Survey research on love. Falling in love seems to be universal. The experience of falling in love seems to be universal. Let me tell you about some of this research. Okay, so we're giving surveys to people in different countries. United States, Japan, places in South America, Europe, Australia. We find that they tend to answer the survey questions very similarly. People in love, we ask them, what is it like to be in love? Oh my goodness, we should just do this right now. How many of you have ever been in love? Stand up, please. If you've ever felt that kind of like falling in love kind of love feeling, stand up. Come on, be honest. It's okay. All right. How many of you, okay, if you're not in love right now, sit down. So the rest of you are actually in love right now. You feel those feelings, right? Look at them. They're already turning red. This is so cool. No, no, no. Come on. Stand up. Over here in the front row. What's your name? Jewel. Jewel, can you tell us, what does it feel like when you think about that guy right now? Just get a little thought right there about how great he is and stuff. Just, and then tell me how you're feeling. What is it like? So You feel happy. You really want to be around that person because they bring out your good side. What else? What else? Anyone else who's in love right now? We had some others. Go ahead.
I think, well, at least to me, right, in the friendship stage, just friendship.
Pardon me?
Yeah.
Friendship. Oh, you're not really in love. Sorry. Well, okay. You might have a friendship. I'm looking for the feelings, though. Come on, people. Be honest with me. Go ahead, in the back.
You feel like you can always trust them.
Pardon me?
You feel like you can always trust them.
You can always trust them? Okay, that's good. You've got some good thoughts. I'm going to show you some of the universals that are related to that falling in love stuff. Here we go. So this is from Helen Fisher. She says, regardless of gender, age, race, or religion, people get... Well, that's not her term, Twitterpated. That's my term, Bambi, right? Twitterpated. Remember that, Bambi? It's springtime, and all Bambi's going walking through the forest with the little thumper and flower, right? And as they go through, you know, like, flower sees another little skunk, and he goes, doing, you know, and he's kind of like, he's all Twitterpated, right? It's like, that's what we're talking about. So that's what she's talking about. She's talking about that kind of love, right? So she says, here's some of the commonalities. Focused attention. You're focused on that person. It's hard to think of other things. Does that ring a bell? Here's another one. Aggrandizing the beloved. You know, they're just—they're great. They're wonderful. Just like, oh, you make them bigger and better and more wonderful than anybody could possibly be. Intrusive thinking. You're trying to do your math homework and these thoughts come into your head. What happens to your grades when you're in love? Oh, you're not in school. That's right. My college students, though, I can always tell when a college student is in love, when they get in love, or when they get engaged, because both of those just kill the grade. You just see the grades, and then they go like that, just really bad. But anyway, let's go on. Intrusive thinking, emotional intensity, powerful feelings, strong feelings, highs and lows, right? Intense energy. Generally, you have more energy, actual physical energy, like you want to like go run or something, right? Mood swings. Okay, yeah, the highs and the lows. More mood swings when you're in love. Yearning for emotional union. Yearning, like wanting that person, wanting to be with them, wanting to just like feeling like, gosh, I want to hug them so tight that we become one person, right? We'll just be a big blob together, and then I'll finally be happy, right? You have that feeling of, oh, I just want a union, right? Changing priorities. Now, math doesn't matter anymore. I want to go hang out with so-and-so, right? Priorities change. You start thinking about all kinds of crazy thoughts about how you want to be with that person forever. And then the emotional dependence that we already talked about, the idea that you become sort of dependent on that person. Okay. I think that's helpful. You could almost think of that as warning signs that you might not really be in love, that you might just be Twitter-pated, right? Like, here's a checklist. Check out how many boxes do you check. And if you can check a whole bunch of those boxes, then you might not be in the same kind of love that your parents are in. You might have something different going on. Anyway, here's another bit of research. We're going to do a true-false activity here. So I think we'll go back to... we're going to go back to standing up. Okay, I'm going to show you some statements, and you're going to tell... Oh, go ahead, please.
I have a question.
Go ahead. Okay, let's talk about that for a moment. Oh, you have a comment too. Whoa, this is getting some hands. Go ahead, please.
There was an Indian tribe where there was reset marriages, and their marriages like always worked out, and that's because they found out that you love who you serve. So as they serve each other, even if they've like never met each other in the marriage, they grew to love each other. So.
Okay, so the question was, do you have to have love to get married? In America, we're kind of biased to the idea of, you know, love and marriage, love and... You know, they go together like a horse and carriage, right? They go together. You shouldn't do one without the other, right? But he's saying, well, there's an Indian tribe somewhere. We'll have to confirm this with him later, but there's an Indian tribe somewhere where they have arranged marriages and their marriages work, right? Here's what I want to tell you about. There's this little place called India. You might have heard of it. It has billions of people who live there, right? Lots of people. India. Their middle class is larger than the population of the United States. These are college-educated, white-collar professionals, all kinds of middle-class kind of people, just like maybe the world you live in. And predominantly, they have arranged marriages. And they have a lower divorce rate than we do in the U.S. So, to answer your question, I would say, well, I don't know that you have to have love, but we're kind of, again, this is the American thing to do. First you fall in love. I don't think I'm going to talk any of you out of that. I'm sure you all want to be in love before you get married. So, anyway, true-false activity. Comparing college-age women to college-age men. I'm sorry. Compared to college-age women, college-age men are more likely to, and I'm going to give you the rest of the sentence, and you stand if you think it's true. College men are more likely to fall in love. Stand if you think that's true. Okay. Wow. Good for you. Okay. So go ahead. Okay, stand if you think it's not true. No rallying. Don't try to rally people. Okay, stand if you're not sure. Oh, okay, all right. Go ahead, sit down. Here's the next one. Men are more likely to fall in love quickly. Yes, all right. I've got a few. Guys, oh my guys. Okay, sit down. Okay. How many of you say it's not true? Stand up. Okay. All right. Go ahead, sit down. How many of you are unsure? Bunch of you. Okay. I think we're going to move on because I don't want to run out of time on you. So here's a few more. We won't do the standing thing, but falling into unrequited love, which means sort of like, I love her, but she doesn't know who I am. Okay. Do you think that's true? Do you think this one's true? Unrequited love? Don't know. Okay, all right. Men are more likely to characterize the partner, their current partner, as the love of their dreams. In other words, how much do you love her? Well, she's, and give them some options, and they grab that most intense option. She's the love of my dreams. Okay, here's what I'm going to tell you. These are all true. So, applause for this guy over here in the hat. Good job. What does this mean, though? So men's notions of love are more romantic, less practical, and another way, the way I like to think about it is that they're simpler. Women are more complex, and they think about love in more complex ways, right? You ask a girl, are you in love? And what kind of answer do you get? It's like a 15-minute answer, right? It's like, well, there's this and there's that, and well, I that, and I kind of feel this, but I don't know if I... You ask a guy, are you in love? And he says, yep. How do you know you're in love? Because I feel it. So, I'm exaggerating, but you get the idea, right? There is a difference there between male love and female love, right? So men and women differ in the complexity of their thinking about love, which is an interesting difference. So if you've got that boyfriend and you ask him questions like, why do you love me? Be prepared. Okay. He hasn't thought that through. It's just like, I just do. But why? I don't know. Okay. Anyway, a quick word about jealousy before we move on. Jealousy is reported by younger people. This is research on jealousy. Jealousy is associated with lower relationship quality and stability. Quality would mean like a bad relationship, low quality, right? And low stability means more likely to break up, right? Women, more than men, use jealousy to test the relationship, bolster self-esteem, gain increased attention, or get revenge. Kind of scary. So, but again, my point is that jealousy is not a sign of love. Please, like, just if you were thinking that before, just get rid of that. Jealousy is not a sign of love. It's a sign of immaturity. It's a sign of insecurity, right? It's not, people who are really in love aren't really super jealous. Okay, so now we're going to go to the biology research. We're going to talk about attraction. This is the falling in love kind of love, right? We have MRIs, magnetic resonance imaging machines. We put people into those machines and we ask them to think about that person you love and we watch what goes on in their brains. That's cool research. We can see what's happening in their brains when they're feeling all Twitter-baited, right? And it's cool. And this is what we see. Natural amphetamines are produced in the brain. They just start, boom, the brain starts pumping out these natural amphetamines. Amphetamines are uppers. Drugs that make you happy and high. It's like it says, phenylethylamine, dopamine, norepinephrine. They cause feelings of euphoria and elation, right? I feel good, right? Twitter pated, right? Okay, here's the problem. The same chemicals happen in sheep's brains. Sheep actually have really good facial recognition skills. They actually know the other sheep in the flock by their faces. And when you show the female sheep, you put her in the machine and you show her images of the other faces of the other males in their flock, and one of the faces comes on and she, all this, all these chemicals, right? Wow. Okay, so if, in other words, if Twitter patient is love, then you have to say that sheep fall in love, right? Those chemicals can last up to 2 to 3 years, and then they start to wane. They start to sort of like fade. They go away. Again, Dr. Rodriguez, the crusher of dreams. Right? Wait a minute, what? 2 to 3 years? Yeah, that's all you get. 2 to 3 years. Let's move on. If you think true love is Twitter patient, you're in for disappointment. Okay? If you think a happy marriage is 50 years of Twitter patient, you're in for disappointment. I love my wife. She's sitting in the back row back there. I love her to death. But am I Twitter-pated? Like, do I sometimes, like, when I'm trying to get ready for presentations like this, oh, I can't concentrate. I'm just thinking about her right now, and I can't stop. And, oh, she's going to be there at the presentation. I better do good. Oh, I'm all nervous because I, oh, she's looking at me. Oh. I don't do that. That's gone, right? But does that mean I don't love her? No. Does that mean I don't love her as much? No. So we'll talk about another kind of love here. Attachment love. That's another kind of love that seems to be like there's a biological basis there, right? So here we go. This is the happily married for years kind of love. This is the I love my parents kind of love. The kind of love, the brain chemistry happening between you and your parents and your siblings, that kind of attachment love. We got research on that, right? Your brain, when you're in that kind of love, produces natural morphines. These are endorphins, and they cause you to feel peace, calm, a sense of security, right? You're all calm and happy when you're around these people. You're not all excited and crazy. You're calm and peaceful, and you feel safe and secure when you're around them, right? That's how I feel when I'm around my wife, right? These don't run out at 2 to 3 years. These last forever, right? Or they can anyway. They can actually reduce physical pain. Maybe at a certain point in your childhood, you got hurt really bad, and one of your parents picked you up and held you, and the pain stopped. It hurt less because your body started producing morphine. Helped you deal with the pain, right? This is real stuff. It's more common in long-term relationships. There's another chemical called oxytocin, and it facilitates attachment as well. In females, it's produced when you hold hands or cuddle with someone you like. So you're holding hands and you're walking. Nothing's really happening in his brain, but in your brain, there's all this attachment. He's great. I like him. Oh, he's so neat. So just be aware of that and be careful. I think that means you have to be careful about who you hold hands with and who you hug and things like that, because you will start forming an attachment whether you want to or not. Let's go on. Okay, so development, when it comes to this biology stuff, the development. Attraction chemistry can lead to attachment chemistry. So that's the falling in love, I'm all crazy for him, and then after a while that fades, but then what you end up with is the attachment stuff. But it can also work the other way around. Attachment chemistry can lead to attraction chemistry, right? We were good friends. Okay, anyway, so here we go. So some married couples were friends for years before they started dating, and then they fell in love, and then they got married. But for most folks, Twitter patient fades. Twitter patient happens first, then it fades to a more stable, friendly affection and deep attraction. That's the more common pattern, right? Okay, so attraction chemistry. Wait a minute, what happened? I got the same slide twice? That's crazy. No, I don't like that. Let's go on. Okay, so making sense of it all. So what can we learn from the biology research? Why did Heavenly Father make us this way? And how can this help us answer questions about love? I will just share this with you. I think there's a reason why we get Twitter-pated. I don't think it's just some weird, he wants us to be like sheep thing, you know? How do you feel? Some of you were getting at it when I asked you, okay, oh, it's time to stop? It says I got a minute. Oh, sorry. Okay, well, I can't trust that clock. Okay, well, we're kind of out of time, so let me get to my... Well, let me just say this. Okay, Twitter patient, it's there for a reason. When you're in love like that, you only see the good in the person. You want to make them happy, and their happiness is more important than your happiness. And you want to live for them, and you want to sacrifice for them, and you want to be the kind of person that they will love. That's not unlike what charity should feel like, right? With the right kind of love. So I think Heavenly Father gives us those chemicals and helps us to feel that, and then He takes it away and He says, okay, now do that on your own, right? That's the goal. That's what you want to get to. And I think that's a good way to think about all that. I kind of ran out of time. Wow, okay. Well, you've got a handout there. And it kind of says everything else that we're going to follow up with. And there wasn't really a whole lot left. So thank you very much for your time.
LDS Home Educators is a non-profit, all-volunteer organization dedicated to providing inspiration to homeschool families. We hope you enjoyed this recording. If you are interested in listening to more recordings or would like to participate in a future conference, please visit our website at ldshe.org.